It's really good to be back, and I was thinking about our goals for this year, because I've been out for a couple of weeks, and was thinking about a conversation that the staff had last year. The pastoral staff got together last year, and we said, okay, what is the most significant thing we could do in 2014? What would have the greatest impact on our church if we were to do this? And so what we decided was the greatest thing that we could do as a church in 2014 is to get the people who are inside the church connected with people who are outside the church. The best thing that we could do for our church is get the people who are inside the church out of church and connected with people who are outside of the church. And the reason for that is that Christians have this reputation for having a fear of or not wanting to associate with people who are outside the church. And so you'll have that happen from time to time, too often actually, where people who are inside the church might dare to venture outside the walls of the church and begin associating with other people, and then people inside the church are going, "You're not around enough. You're not hanging out in our circles enough. You're not getting connected in our ministries enough. You know what? You're spending way too much time with them. Do you know what kind of an influence they are on you? What are you doing out there? Don't stop. Knock that off. Don't go there." You know, we have that happen where in the church, people who venture outside and start hanging out with people who look different and have different values and different lifestyles and things, then other people in the church are going, "Not too sure. I don't think that's a good idea. Did you know that they're hanging out with..." Well, you know, that reminds me of something that happened to Jesus. In Luke chapter 15, you can turn there. In Luke chapter 15, starting in verse 1, it says, "Now the tax collectors and sinners were all drawing near to hear him. And the Pharisees and the scribes grumbled, saying, 'This man receives sinners and eats with them.' So he told them this parable. 'What man of you, having 100 sheep, if he has lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the one that is lost until he finds it? And when he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and his neighbors, saying to them, "Rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep that was lost." Just so, I tell you, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance. Or what woman, having 10 silver coins, if she loses one coin, does not light a lamp and sweep the house and diligently seek until she finds it? And when she has found it, she calls together her friends and neighbors, saying, "Rejoice with me, for I have found the coin that I had lost." Just so, I tell you, there is joy before the angels of God over one sinner who repents." Have you ever had that sinking feeling, that sinking feeling that you've lost it? Not like you've lost it, but like but like you had something and you can't find it, something important to you? Maybe it's some money, maybe it's a book, maybe it's something that was given to you, a gift or something. Maybe it's a child. I have 4 children. And so from time to time, we accidentally lose one. We have an OMSI membership. And we go to OMSI and we spend time at the exhibits there. And my kids are very comfortable at OMSI. And my 2-year-old is very comfortable at OMSI, but is not very communicative about where she's going when. And so sometimes... actually, all the time. My wife and I are there and we count. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Like, we move from one room to the other. 1, 2, 3, 4. I've got 3. How many have you got? I've got 1. Good. All right. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. I mean, everywhere we go, we're counting. The kids are enjoying things. They're looking at exhibits. They're having fun. We're counting. 1, 2, 3, 4. Because we don't want to lose one. And every once in a while I get distracted by a display and I look at it and I looked up and I go, 1, 2, 3. I've got 3. How many do you have? I've got none. You look around. Where's the 2-year-old? And sometimes you see the 2-year-old. That's nice when you see them running into the other room. And sometimes you don't see that. And so you start looking around and you're going, I'm not panicked. I'm looking on the other side of the display. I'm looking at this display. I'm looking at her favorite display. I'm not panicked. I'm in full-blown panic mode. And you're running around. Eliana! Never, not once does she say, "Here I am." And then we find them. We have never permanently lost a child yet. But there's that moment of terror and panic as you have lost one momentarily, and you search diligently to find the one that is lost. And so this is what Jesus is saying, right? Jesus is hanging out with tax collectors and sinners. People are drawing near to him. The people that you don't want to hang out with, and the people that you probably shouldn't hang out with, these are the kinds of people that are hanging out with Jesus right now. And they're gathering around him to listen to the things that he's saying, and he is hearing the grumblings of the Pharisees, the religious leaders. And the religious leaders are saying, "What is he doing? Why is he hanging out with these people?" And so Jesus tells him this story. "Look, which one of you guys who has 99 sheep wouldn't go if you have 100 sheep and you lose one, which one doesn't leave the 99 in the open field to go find that one that's lost? And which one doesn't pick it up and bring it home again and celebrate because you found it? And which one of you ladies, if you lose a coin, doesn't sweep the whole house, turn on all the lights so that you can see clearly and sweep the whole house so that you can find that one coin and then celebrate when you find it? Who doesn't do that?" And you know, I have spent a lot of years reading these stories, trying to be the right answer guy, right? The assumptive question. Which one of you doesn't do this? And so I read the question, "Which man of you, having 100 sheep, if he lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the one that's lost until he finds it?" And I find myself trying to force myself to say, "That would be me. I would do that." When deep down I'm going, I wouldn't leave 99. I wouldn't leave 99 in the open country where the wolves and the lions might come and get them, where another third of them might wander off on their own, unsupervised. I'm not likely to do that. But Jesus asks this with an assumptive question, and so the right answer is probably yes. So, "Oh yeah, Jesus, I'll do it. I grew up in the church. Whatever Jesus says, my answer is yes." "What man of you, having 100 sheep, if he lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the one that's lost until he finds it?" Well, I definitely would. "And when he has found it, lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing." Lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing. I mean, I'm happy that I found the thing, but that stupid sheep wandered off on its own. I've got 99 of them. This isn't a family pet, right? This isn't Bo Peep's sheep. This is one of 100. And so I'm not going to pick the thing up and cuddle it all the way home and coddle it so that it knows, "Oh, hey, if I get off on my own, I'll get some extra attention." The thing can walk home under its own power. I'll chase it with a stick if I have to. But I find myself trying to be the good Christian that I should. Yep, Jesus totally would pick that thing up, put it on my shoulders, carry it back. Right? Assumptive yes, assumptive me. Yep, okay, that's the right answer, I guess. "And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and neighbors, saying to them, 'Rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep that was lost.'" And now we've just gotten ridiculous. Right? "Which one of you goes out and finds their sheep and puts it on their shoulder and coddles the thing all the way home and then throws a party because you found it?" I didn't even throw a party when I found my daughter. I was awful happy that I found her, don't get me wrong. But I didn't throw a party. And all these years I've been trying to read this thing. There's an assumptive question, and the assumptive answer is obviously yes, that's the right Christian answer. And so I've been trying to give it, and now I'm wondering, it would be a whole lot easier if I read this with an assumptive no. Which one of you, if you lost a sheep, would leave 99 in the open country so that you could go and find that one and pick it up and coddle it and bring it all the way home and throw a party and celebrate, and everybody goes, nope. I mean, I would find the thing and I would bring it back, but all the details, no. Just so, I tell you, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance. And which of you, having lost a coin, does not light a lamp and sweep the house diligently to seek it until she finds it? And when she's found it, calls together all her friends and neighbors, saying, rejoice with me, for I have found the coin that I had lost. And so I read that and I go, okay, yeah, my kids have coins, right? I told you I got 4 kids, and they from time to time come into some money, and it's usually quarters. And quarters burn a hole in their pocket. They cannot keep quarters in their pocket. It has to be spent. But sometimes they come into quarters that are in their pockets and we can't get to the store immediately so that they can spend them. And so then they just take them out and they look at them and they count them and they play with them and they're talking about them. And I know how many quarters they have and they know how many quarters they have, but they just keep counting them because it's fun, right? And they talk about all of the things that they could do with them and they play with them and it goes all over the place. And then pretty soon they've lost a quarter. And so what do? When you lose a quarter? Well, you tear the whole house apart looking for a quarter that usually ends up being in Dad's pocket so that we can stop looking. I don't know how it got there. But what if we're not talking about quarters? What if we're talking about something that's a little bit more valuable? Right? What if something a little bit more valuable gets lost? I'm going to tell this story. I'm sorry. My sweet wife, one time, bless her heart, she waited until after church to tell me. After I had been done preaching and all my morning responsibilities, she waits until after church to tell me that she had lost her wedding ring. She had taken it off. She had set it on the bathroom counter. She had helped a child with the toilet. And she was wondering, could she have possibly knocked that thing off of the counter and into the toilet? And so I come home, and we tore that bathroom apart. And I took the toilet off, and we shop-vacked the toilet, and we checked to make sure, was there any possible way that even if it had fallen in the toilet, that it maybe could it have gotten stuck in a pee trap in there or something somewhere? You know, we don't normally like anything to get stuck in there, but please, God, could this one have gotten stuck? And we tore the bathroom apart, and it was not in that toilet. It was, however, in the bottom of the garbage can underneath the Kleenex and things, and we found it. And we found it because, out of desperation, we had torn the whole bathroom apart until we found it. I mean, we look for these things, but you know what we didn't do afterwards? We did not throw a party. No party. I guess we are not very fun people, not having parties. but just so, I tell you, there is joy before the angels of God over one sinner who repents. And what I think is happening here is Jesus is setting us up and going, you wouldn't do it. You wouldn't do it, but that's the kind of God that we have. We have the kind of God who goes and who pursues the ones who are lost so that He can bring them back. He will not lose one. Not even one. He will go to the ends of the earth. He will go down into the ravines to pull that sheep out. He will tear the house apart to find that coin. We serve the kind of God who will not lose one. Jesus says, "This is the purpose for which I came. The Father has sent me and He has entrusted these to me." And when He's praying in John 17, He says, "Father, those that You have entrusted to me, I have not lost even one." Jesus is the good shepherd. He's the shepherd who lays down His life for the sheep because He loves them. And there is rejoicing in heaven over every single one. There is a celebration, there is a party, there is rejoicing, there's yelling and cheering. Everybody is ecstatic because of every single one that God goes out and brings back. And I start reading these things, and we have now here three stories that are all put together. Right? You have the lost sheep. And then you have the lost coin, and then you have the lost son. And we've already done the lost son, so I'm not going to do a lot of detail about that. But I want you to notice the contrast, right? In every single story, you have something that is lost, that is then found, and that is then celebrated. So in the story of the lost sheep, the sheep gets lost. Somebody goes, they get that sheep, they bring the sheep back, and it is found, and they celebrate. The coin is lost. Somebody goes out, somebody gets that coin, brings that coin back, and it is celebrated. And then you come to the story of the lost son, and the son comes to his father, and he says, "Dad, look, I wish that you were dead, because then I could have my inheritance now. But since you're not dead yet, could I just have my inheritance now and go do my thing?" I mean, the offense of this is ridiculous. And this kid is brash enough to ask for that. And the father gives it to him. And so then the son, taking his inheritance that he's taken prematurely, now goes and spends the whole thing recklessly. Wastefully spends the whole thing so that it's gone, and then having nothing left, has nowhere to turn, has no friends, nobody to help him. And so what does he do? He goes, "I guess I'll go back home. And I know that I can't be treated as a son if I go back home, but maybe he'll treat me as a hired slave or a hired servant." And so he goes back home. And the dad comes running out to meet him and brings him in and throws a party and says, "Hey, my son is back. My son who was lost has been found." And he throws a great big party. And the older brother is sitting outside. Now, what's weird about this is just having two stories about things that were lost, and then somebody goes and gets them and brings them back. And here's one story where somebody is lost, and who went to go get him? Nobody went. Nobody went to go get that lost brother. The older brother is ticked. What do you mean he asked for the inheritance? You gave it to him, and then he just took it and he's gone? Now that older brother now has responsibility for the whole thing, right? Everything that's left belongs to him. That's what will be his inheritance. He's the manager of the whole estate now. He's the one responsible for the family. It's his responsibility to go and rescue that younger son, his younger brother, and bring him back and restore the honor of the family name from this black sheep, this rebel who's gone off on his own. And he doesn't do it. He says, "Good riddance, I've written him off. He's gone to me. He's dead to me. He is no longer family." To the point when he comes back, right, not only did he not go and get him and bring him back, he's also standing outside and refuses to go into the celebration. So that when the father sees the son coming home, he goes out and embraces him and throws a party and says, "Hey, everybody celebrate with me because the lost has been found." And the older brother is standing outside going, "I'm not going in. I'm not going to celebrate that." And here are the stories, right? Story number one, who's going to go out and get this one and bring them back and celebrate? Not me. I might go and get them and I might bring them back, but I'm not going to throw a party. Who's going to go out and get this coin and bring it back? and throw a party. Not me. I might look around and I might find it, but I'm not going to throw a party. Jesus is going, yeah. You're not going to go do it. You're not going to go do it. Even if it's your brother, you're not going to do it. Your own flesh and blood, you're not going to go and find the one that's lost. In fact, you are so self-righteous that even if it comes wandering back on its own, you refuse to celebrate it. And you're stuck outside the party. There is more rejoicing over every sinner who is saved than over those self-righteous ones who believe they don't need to be saved. The reason that Jesus came was to seek and to save those who are lost. Those who have wandered away from God. Those who have said, I don't want to have anything to do with God. Those who have wanted to live their own lives their own way. Jesus came to save them. That's the only reason he came. So when he's hanging out with these people that other people are looking at going, you don't want to hang out with them and you probably shouldn't hang out with them. Jesus is saying, this is the reason for which I came. This is who God is. God sent me to go out and to save them and to bring them back. I am the good shepherd who will lay down his life for the sheep. And when I bring them in, there will be rejoicing with me and there will be rejoicing in heaven over every single one who is saved. And as I read this, I recognize that we as a church must do this. Right? We must do this not just because Jesus tells us in John chapter 20 that just as the Father sent me, so I am sending you. That's a pretty good reason for us to do it. Jesus commanded us saying, just as the Father sent me, so I am sending you to go out. But also just for the sake of our own hearts. We must get out of the church. Don't wander away and be lost forever. Don't make me come find you. But you can't find lost sheep in the church. That's not where you go to find them. That's not where you go to get them. There are times that lost sheep come wandering into the church. That's a miracle. Right? No shepherd goes, well, I lost a sheep. I'll just leave the gate open and hope they wander in. No, you go out and you find the sheep and you bring them in. For the sake of those who are lost, we must go out and befriend those who are lost. And for the sake of our own hearts, lest we become these self-righteous people who refuse to go and who refuse to celebrate even when they come wandering in. For the sake of our own hearts, we must go out and be with people whose values are very different than ours, whose lifestyle is very different than ours, so that we can connect with them and recognize how very similar we are. We can pretend in the church, we can have all kinds of forms and things that we, structures and things that we do so that we can pretend that we're the righteous club, the holy club, whatever it is that we want to pretend that we are. But in reality, we're a whole bunch of lost sheep that God has gathered together, collected and put in one pen together. And as long as we hang out inside the pen, we forget that we didn't come wandering in on our own. And look at how wonderful we are because we're all inside the pen. We have to go back out to remind ourselves over and over and over and over again, God has come for me. God has come for me. God has come for me. And because he came and he saved me, there is rejoicing in heaven. And for every person that I connect with and every person that I tell about Christ, there's going to be rejoicing in heaven. Because that's the kind of God that we serve. Jesus Christ didn't stay in heaven and wait to see if we'd come wandering in. He said, I will become a man. And I will go and I will hang out with the lowliest, the poorest people, the sickest people, the people who need the most help. I will hang out with them. And I will tell them the hope of heaven, the hope of salvation. And then because they cannot earn their way in, and because they cannot make their way in, I will lay down my life for the sheep. And Jesus did exactly that. He allowed himself to be ridiculed, persecuted on behalf of those that he came to save. And ultimately he died. He died as a criminal, not because he had done anything criminal, but so that he could save those who are sinners. It was the reason that Jesus came, and he has now told us, as the Father has sent me, so I am sending you. This morning we get to remember together through communion that Jesus Christ came to save us, and he has not lost even one. All that the Father has given to him, he has kept. And so the worship team's going to come up and we're going to sing a song. And during the next song, I want you to come and take the bread and the cup back to your seat. If that's what you believe, that Jesus Christ has come for you. Please come up and take this back to your seat. And after the next song, I will come up and we will take it together as a way of remembering what Jesus has done. And then after the service, we're going to have a meal together, and we're going to talk a little bit about what does it look like for us to connect with people outside the church. And here's what I don't want you to hear, okay? I want to be really clear about this even now before we get to that. I am not telling you to go out and take pity on people. I'm not telling you to go out and evangelize people. I'm not telling you to go out and persuade people that they have to come into church. All I'm asking you to do is to associate with, become friends with people that are outside the church. Jesus will save them. That's his responsibility. All I'm telling you is that for the sake of your own soul and for the sake of their soul, would you be friends with people that are outside the church? We can talk in a little bit about ways to do that. But right now, let's go to the Lord in prayer and let's thank him for how great he is. Father in heaven, we come to you. We come to you knowing that you first came for us. We would never wander in on our own and acknowledge you and give our lives over to you if you had not first given your life for us. And so we thank you. Thank you that though we are sinners and we don't do the right things and we wander off on our own, thank you that you have come to save us and bring us back. Thank you that we can be in the safety of the fold. Thank you that we can acknowledge the great shepherd. And Lord, we ask, when we are self-righteous and think of ourselves as better than we ought to think, would you convict us? And help us to recognize our sinful state that once again we might be saved by you. Jesus, we ask this in your name. Amen.